I actually did a radio interview yesterday with a woman for the World Diabetes Federation.
Cool.
And man, it did not go well.
Oh dear.
But there you go.
Did you accidentally go pro-diabetes and then you realise that the woman is actually against diabetes? Or?
Oh yeah, I thought it was the Federation for Diabetes. Yeah,
I see where you made the mistake there. Yeah,
I hate consistent blood sugar levels. I'm against it. I think we should live wild and free.
Webcomics Company Podcast. Visit www.webcomics.co.
Hello and welcome to the Webcomics Company podcast. I am Luke Healy of SwanyNook.com, and I am, of course, joined always, as always, by lovely, lovely co-hosts, Luke Searle of LukeSearle.com.
Hello.
Hi. We have also, of course, Matt Dyson of Mukio.com.
Hello.
And we're down today, Zoe of ZoeRobinson.com. Creator of the oldest British webcomic, I believe, and also we are down James Spence of girlsinspace.co.uk, but to replace them and be super cool and talk to us, we have Evan Dam of rice-boy.com here today.
Hello.
Hello, and thank you for coming on the show. It sounds like real radio and everything.
It's my pleasure.
A truly international podcast today.
We've got two whole corners of the globe, although I'm not sure that spheres have corners, now that I think about it. we won't dwell. So today we're going to be talking a little bit later in the show about world building, but first we're going to talk to Evan about his comics, etc. So, hello Evan, again, thank you for coming on the show, etc. Do you want to, for people listening who maybe haven't read your stuff, do you want to just give a little description of what it is you do and maybe about your current comic?
Sure. So since 2006, I've been publishing stuff online. I've done a series of long format fantasy stories all set in the same world. My first story was Rice Boy, which is a sort of, I guess, surrealistic pastiche of your standard high fantasy story, you know, in a colorful kind of context full of strange creatures. And since that, I've been doing other different sorts of stories to fill in the history and the feel of the setting. Order of Tales was my second long format comic, which I finished in 2010. I've done a number of short stories, and my current comic is called Vatu, which is, I think, very different from the other ones. It's structured sort of like a biography of a character a young girl who is from a tribal culture who gets caught in the midst of a huge culture clash. And it's really fun working in this invented world. It's kind of an interesting metaphorical lens to look at storytelling through.
Excellent. And so you're currently updating Vatu on rice-boy.com, which everybody should read because it's absolutely excellent. And so you're saying that it's a biography of the character. So is the comic going to continue at the current part in the comic? She's quite young, but is the comic going to show her entire life?
I obviously not exactly, but it will be the biggest thing I've ever done. It's formatted in a biography in that it's about her life and how it interfaces with this huge event, but it's not going to be in like fine detail the whole time. It's going to be skipping ahead and all that.
Okay. Yeah. Now you said there that it was huge, which you said, I think it was on Twitter you posted that it's going to be over 1,000 pages.
Yeah.
Crazy. Good crazy.
I've always been very attracted to big stories. You know, every idea that I have, like, unless I consciously try to keep it from doing so, it spins out into some enormous thing that'll take me, you know, years and years of slow build to get to. But and that's why the other two big things that I've done have been 450 and 750 pages respectively. And this one's going to be over 1,000. I'm not sure how big exactly.
I have a copy of Voiceboy here.
How far in advance?
Oh, good.
How far in advance and to what level of detail are you writing ahead? I mean, I'm guessing with Vata at the moment, you know how it will end? Or do
yes.
You? Yeah. But did you have every individual page scripted? Or
not quite that. I try to work from wide to tight. I have, you know, vague ideas of happenings throughout the entire story, and as I approach, like, the next, it's divided into books. I'm about midway through the second book right now, and the third book is almost completely planned out, as tightly as it will get planned out before I draw it. The fourth book less so, and the fifth book less so. But I, you know, it's a never-ending process. I am two or three times a week. I'm sitting down for a few hours and writing, tightening up what's to come.
And that you're saying there that it's planned in books. And you released your last comic, Order of Tales, in two books initially, and I think have you put out, or you're putting out soon, like a full, complete edition of it?
Yeah, the Order of Tales has been printed in three individual books, which were printed in very short runs, so they're hard to keep in stock, which is really frustrating for readers. But yeah, I'm working on. I have been lately editing the video for a Kickstarter project to fund the one volume edition, which is how I have always wanted the thing printed, and which will be easier for me to keep in stock and make an actual profit on. So that should be up in the next couple of weeks.
We've touched on Kickstarter in the podcast before. A lot of us have been mentioning that it seems to be an increasing trend with a lot of people trying to use it to get projects just like that started up. But it's something that, unfortunately, none of us ourselves have actually had any experience for. How have you found it?
It's great. It's it's essentially just a platform to allow for pre-orders. As far as I and most webcomic people have used it. The difference being that it allows for, it's pretty streamlined, it allows for varying levels of pledges, and also it has, it very much has its own audience. Like for the Rice Boy book, I funded the Rice Boy book through another Kickstarter, and a lot of it was my readers wanted the book, would go get it through the Kickstarter pre-order. But there's a large number of people who just follow things that they like on Kickstarter that they've never heard of before.
Well, that's good. Cool.
Yeah.
And Rice Boy was like really successful on Kickstarter. It got like what $10,000 over what you were looking for?
I was looking for $6,000, meaning I would have had to pay for about half of the run out of pocket. But it went so far over goal that I had extra.
which is, you know, obviously that's a really cool sort of success. So for Vatu, I presume then that you're planning to release Vatu in books at some stage as well.
Yeah. What I would like to do with it, and this is kind of far off because I have to still do the Order of Tales book, and these things are expensive and time consuming. I would like to print it in books of roughly 300 or 400 pages each, which I feel is I like making big books of a lot of content for a reasonable retail price, and this one will be too big to ever go in one book probably. So I'm probably just going to print it in several separate books in the way that I've been doing that have the same. Sorry, go on.
You can do a box set.
Yeah, maybe. I like that idea.
I'm just going to add a quick caveat here. If you're listening from outside the United States, I don't believe that you can use Kickstarter outside the US.
There are some UK equivalents.
Indiegogo is the one I've heard of.
You can fund Kickstarter if you're not from the United States.
You can fund somebody else's, but you can't start a project of your own.
Oh, is that the case?
That is the case, unfortunately, at the moment. There are UK equivalents, as we've mentioned, though. What I might do is I'll try and get a list of the UK equivalents and put them in the show notes. I'll send them to Zoe to put in the show notes.
I do know Indiegogo looks pretty like a pretty cool alternative.
Yeah, a friend of mine has used Indiegogo before and had quite positive results, and I think there are a couple more as well, but I'll look into it and get those in the show notes for everybody listening.
So like you said, it's obviously Vatu is going to be pretty massive, and I read an interview with you a while ago that it was just after you finished Order of Tales, I believe, and you were saying that, you know, it was a real sort of relief to get it finished. How do you feel going into a project knowing that it's going to be so big?
Good.
I'm just wondering, like.
No, whether, I mean, I know I'm. I there's background noise here. Sorry. I'm constantly wanting to work on stuff like this, and I'm very, very engaged in this project, and probably more than anything I've done before, and it will do interesting things that I've never done before. It'll go in directions that I have no experience writing or drawing. So that's interesting to me. It'll keep me challenged and interested. But I'm constantly in need of stuff like this to work on. That is what makes me happy and sane.
Well, what's the closest you've ever come to giving up, or is that something that just never really has never really crossed your mind at all?
I give up all the time. Rice Boy, if I hadn't had a lot of positive feedback by standards at the time, like, I would have given up within the first 100 pages. And you know, I'm coming up with cool ideas for things that I would like to work on, and just losing interest or not being able to do it all the time. I 1% of the things that I get interested in and start working on, I finish. But there's an extent to which accountability helps a lot. So I will not stop Vatu until it's done, because I know what I'm doing, and people are reading it, and I'm really engaged in it more than anything else.
You said there that you got a lot of positive feedback on Rice Boy, and I remember, I can't remember if it was on Twitter or on Formspring or something, but you said that while you obviously appreciate people saying how much they love Rice Boy, you do not appreciate so much people saying that Rice Boy is still the best thing that you've done.
Yeah.
Has it been hard to escape, I guess, the shadow? Because it was like really popular.
Right? Yeah, it was. I don't really actually know if it's more popular than the other stuff. And that frustrates me to hear that sort of thing. But I can't complain about it, and I can't complain that Rice Boy is selling well, and that when the Order of Tales book is out, it might not sell as well. I'm doing stuff that I'm proud of, and the people will like it or they won't, and people will like more of it than some of it, more than others of it, and that's fine. But I don't know. I finished that thing like 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, and it's hard for me to look at some of it now, and I see that there's a lot of things in it that I'm doing better in different ways now, and all that. But you know, I don't know, and I have that relationship to other people's work too. Like, I'll like stuff that I know that they're not proud of more than what they're working on now, but I try not to tell them because I understand.
it happens with single panel comics as well. I have about, I think my top five comics have been read more often than the other 495 put together, which mm-hmm. is sometimes a little deflating in a way. But
it is, but you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. I've got one comic from the first 3 months of the run that still gets a lot of traffic because it's linked on a TV Tropes article.
That's
and cool. And it's the most, some of the most dire art that I've ever done. But it still gets a hell of a lot of traffic. It's just, why won't you die?
It's a big thing with artists I know who do like fan art. They get a lot, like illustrator type artists, they get a lot more attention for that kind of stuff than their own intellectual property. But that's okay.
The secret to not having that feeling is to never make anything that's popular.
There you go. So far, I'm doing well with that.
So, yeah, I actually just wanted to ask you, because we discussed in a previous episode about all about the... I can't remember what the episode was about, but we brought up about the DC relaunch and how they're making a big push to sell like digital comics online. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be interesting to get your opinion on it, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but you make a living from doing comics online, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, you're part of, I guess, a fairly small group, but do you think that that's going to have an effect that like, mainstream sort of, like, big comics publishers are moving to online publication? Do you think that that's going to have an effect on the way webcomics works, whether it'll mean people will be, I guess, more, you know, used to paying for comics online, whether people kind of won't go for webcomics, or do you think it's just like a totally different thing and it won't have any effect? I just thought you could say something about that.
Sure.
So that's why I asked a question.
I do think it's a totally different thing. To me, the most important thing about webcomics is not that they are on the web, it's that they are free. So anything, and you know, DC is never gonna put like a flagship title for free for anybody ever. So like selling digital comics, the way that they and Marvel are doing it is just completely off my radar. Basically, I don't care, and I don't think that my kind of stuff would ever work like that, because it's very niche. And to me, that what webcomics are good at is kind of that distillation of what independent art is making something weird, making it really, really easy to find, and then it will, it if it's good, it becomes successful because it's free, and the niche that
the
would like
will
it
come
can find
to the
it
comic,
yeah,
rather than the comic to the audience, in a way,
right? So it's a very different thing from, you know, the two biggest and most popular comic publishers in the world selling their stuff online.
Yeah, I suppose that web comics don't really equate to the kind of comics that DC and Marvel publish anyway, like in a real world sense. They're kind of maybe, you know, more like what would be indie comics.
It is indie comics. I try to do a lot of like indie alternative comics conventions, and there's more and more crossover between those two communities in terms of artists and audience, and it is indie comics. It's just not printed in mini comics, it's put online for free.
Yeah, I think there's definitely more overlap with the indie comic scene. I mean, I'm kind of tight roping that line at the moment.
Me too, I feel like.
So, yeah. But no, I think I completely agree with you, really, that they're two separate entities, and that while we are all comics, Marvel and DC and all the other main publishers are going for a completely different business structure to what we're going for. It's a different business model. It's a different revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
To us, a lot of it's the monetization of our comics is mainly on collections, which it's the difference between in music putting out singles and putting out albums. We make our money off albums, they make their money out of singles and albums, and that's all they do, but we also do the merchandise and things like that.
A significant difference also is the amount of money that that we're dealing with. I don't have a distributor. I don't have a publisher. I don't have, you know, I'm not working with anyone. So all of the money off of the books that I sell is mine.
Yeah.
Selling, you know, a ton of single monthly issues and splitting a small profit for each one between several different creators, and then I don't know. It's a very different thing.
Very much so.
And just on the subject of conventions, Luke and Matt, you guys are going to convention this weekend, aren't you?
We are indeed.
I'm jealous, but yeah. Do you want to just say anything about Thought Bubble there quickly? Do you want to plug yourselves for people who be listening?
Do you want to go first, Luke?
We were actually going to be on tables next to each other, so
yeah, we're
not going to be able to see one of us and not see the other.
Unless you're really
rude.
We're going
to be at Thought Bubble in Leeds on the this weekend, which is the 18th and 19th of November 2011. Possibly you are listening to this after this has happened.
It's possible.
And we are in Savills Hall. Tables 138 and 139.
We are indeed. Do you have any shiny new things with you this weekend, Luke?
I've got my collection of it's called Weapons Grade Pantonium, which is a collection of 100 comics or so. I should have some badges and an array of prints and as well.
Cool. I will also be there, and I have with me yet again. It debuted at MCM Expo a few weeks ago, but I have the first ever Muin Kyo collection, nice and shinily published by Orangutan Comics. It's beautiful, lovely paperback book, all in full colour. I also have the usual array of mini comics and Lion Cub figurines and other such things. And I love drawing pictures for people, so come and ask me.
Evan, can I ask you about how the convention scene works in the States? In the United Kingdom, because essentially we're quite a small country, I pretty much know all of the stuff that's going on. But is there a set of conventions in each area or each state, as well as the larger ones that we would have heard of, such as San Diego and SPX?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how it works in other parts of the world, so I don't know what to compare it to. But there are many, many conventions. There's there's the big box mainstream conventions, and there's independent ones. There's no real regional network like you were talking about. I'm flying across the country two or three times a year to do shows in California and in Portland and stuff like that.
Okay, can I ask where you live? Sorry.
New York City.
New York City.
There's two I've only been here a year, so I can't really say that I do them every year, but there's two in New York City that are very good. And, the ones that I go to and that are profitable for me are mostly New York City, Mocha in New York City, and the Small Press Expo in Bethesda outside of DC, and the Alternative Press Expo in San Francisco, and what else? There's the Stumptown Comics Fest in Portland, Oregon is very good too.
Very cool. Would you ever consider coming over and doing one over in the UK?
Yeah, I would. I would like to do something like that, but the thing is, I do these mostly because they are profitable for me. There's it would not be worth it for me to do basically any convention for just exposure or whatever. So I'm not sure if it would be worth the thousands of dollars of travel. but I would like to do it. Yeah,
I think we were covering that last episode a little bit. That it might have actually been in the pre-show, so it might not have been on the podcast. But we were saying that conventions, if you're really honest with yourself, there's no point doing them just for exposure, because handing out leaflets doesn't really do anything in terms anything.
Especially for webcomics. Like, maybe before that was before webcomics were an option for independent creators, it would have been good to do that for exposure. But now, like, it's just such a drop in the bucket. Even the number of people who'll see your stuff at an enormous convention compared to spending $100 on ads online.
Yeah, it sounds so materialistic and stupid, but I do conventions to sell books, and if I didn't think I could sell books, then I wouldn't go. But I think there are a lot of people that are similar and do the same. I do it to sell books, and I do it to meet people, because the social aspects of conventions are absolutely fantastic.
That's
what keeps me going.
Social and the kind of networking thing. Most of the connections that have been professionally useful to me have been at conventions, because there's nothing that compares to meeting people in person.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I met Luke here at the first convention I ever did a couple of years ago, and through Luke I met everybody else from the podcast, and through all those people I've met other people, and it just it makes the cartooning world that little bit smaller, which is nice. And I have found through doing it that most people in cartooning are just genuinely nice people.
Oh, totally.
It's absolutely fantastic that while there are the odd little bits of antisocial cliques, as there are in any single group of things, mostly everybody's fantastic. And
antisocial cliques? Yeah. I'm just picturing, like...
Well, you know what I mean.
And, like, leather jackets and sunglasses and...
Oh, that's fantastic. That's a cooler...
There's a lot of people in comics who have, like, social... who struggle with dealing with other people, as I do, I think. Generally, they kind of err on the side of being nice to each other, at least.
Actually, to be honest, it's the more shy people that I've found that tend to be the nicest people. Once you actually get talking to them, they tend to be the nicest people.
Uh-huh.
which is really good.
Not a fan of extroverts, no.
I can't not be a fan of extroverts, because I seem to be one myself. Hello, everyone!
I would say
you don't meet a whole lot of them in this line of work, though.
I'll just talk to anyone.
When I met you, Matt, you were wearing a bowler hat.
I was wearing a bowler hat, yes.
You were wearing a bowler hat.
Yes.
And I just thought, that guy.
Yeah.
That guy knows what he's doing in his life.
Also, Evan, just for full disclosure, the last convention I was at, on the first day, I was wearing a devil onesie, and I mean full-on fabric onesie, and on the second day, I was wearing a full-on monkey onesie, Bloodhound Gang style.
Bloodhound Gang style.
Yeah.
I'm glad you just said that.
I don't exactly hide at conventions.
And was that effective? Was that a good strategy, Matt?
It is good, actually, because it gets a lot of people talking to you, especially a lot of the cosplayers. And it's a good conversation starter, and it sounds stupid, but I don't even care if people come up to me and don't buy things to a point, as long as they're nice and they have a nice chat with us. And that starts a lot of conversations, wearing the silly hats and the silly costumes and stuff. And
I generally tend to wear... nice shirt and tie, or maybe suit, which also starts conversations in that in that kind of context.
I see. I have a friend that does that. Have you? I don't know if you've ever heard of a bunny comic by a guy called Lem. He's a friend of mine, and he tends to go to conventions in suits. I'm actually really quite excited because it's his first convention in like a year this weekend. He's actually coming to Thought Bubble this weekend, and he's on the other side of me to what Luke is. So I'm looking forward to, Lem, if you're listening to this, I'm looking forward to you in your suit at the weekend.
Now, I've been to a few conventions, and they were... you know, I wish I'd listened to our podcast about conventions before I'd gone to conventions, you know what I mean? but what do people usually wear? Because my instinct would be to wear, a suit and tie.
To be honest, no, I'd normally just wear what I'm comfortable wearing.
Yeah, that's the norm, I think.
The people that are going there to see you want to see you in what you're comfortably wearing. They want to see you in your natural habitat, if you will. And the people that are going there that have never met you before, it's within their best interests for them to meet you as you are, if you know what I mean.
Or I don't wear a suit and tie normally, but I like, you know, I feel that if I'm representing myself in person to my readers, I should look professional.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that is a different things for different people.
Yeah, I see both sides of it, really. I mean, personally, myself, I just got in what I'm going to be... Well, for me, a lot of the time, I'm travelling a long way to them, so it's... I mean, not a long way in terms of America. you know what they say, in America, 100 years is a long time, in Britain, 100 miles is a long distance. but it's usually I'm travelling quite away for us. And so I just want something I'm going to be comfortable in for 3 days in a busy, sweatily hot convention hall.
So you went for the onesie.
So the onesie was comfy as anything. It really was.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You should have seen me in the pub in it afterwards.
Oh my god. Are there pictures? Do pictures exist of this? Because I'd quite like to see them.
I'm pretty sure pictures exist of this, yeah.
I see. You'll have to throw me a link at some point. But you know what, guys? You know what? I'm about to tell you what, in case you didn't know. There you go. This podcast has been going on for about 40 minutes. It has. And I think it's been absolutely excellent. But, Luke, you have to head off now?
I have to head off. I've had a text message which I need to take some action as a regard of. So, yeah.
So I think maybe we could wrap up the show here and just we could all just sign off and we could all just say what a lovely time we've had, because it's been a very fun, very enlightening episode.
It's been fantastic to have you on, Evan.
Thanks
for having me,
and hopefully we might be able to convince you that we're not too weird and to have you on at some point again in the future, maybe.
Yeah, sure, man, that is a good idea.
Excellent. You sound immensely sincere. So I think we are going to sign off. So yes, today we have had Evan Dam of rice-boy.com, whose comic you should absolutely go read. We have had Luke Searle of lukesearle.com.
Hello.
Hello. So, goodbye, I think you mean.
Oh, yes, goodbye.
yes. We have had Matt Dyson of Mukio.com.
Bye-bye.
And myself, Luke Healy of SwaneyNook.com. So thank you very much for listening, and we will hopefully have more for you soon on webcomics.co.